may proceed.
Hey, police court, I'm Bill Cruy. I have offices in Shawsville, Virginia, which is near Christiansburg. And I've been practicing law 48 years and still enjoy every minute of it. This is what I call my career case. It's been going on for a long, long time. And this is an appeal. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Okay. This case was in Montgomery County, Virginia. And it's been before this court before. But to give you a little history, this was a conflict over a roadway. McDaniel was doing the improvements, and a neighbor blocked the road. And there was a suit brought on two or three different theories. Judge Grubbs was a judge back at that time in 2007, and he entered an order granting an injunction against the Nestors, the defendants, from interfering with the road. Also, in that order, the suit was filed for malicious prosecution plus a business conspiracy under 8.02-499-500. Well, Judge Grubbs ruled in favor of the plaintiff, entered an injunction against the Nestors from interfering with the road, and also awarded legal fees.
Counsel, may I ask you this? You got a $0 verdict.
This was the second count.
Right.
They held for the plaintiff, but the first count, malicious prosecution, they gave an award of $1,500 punitive damages, $5,000 compensatory damages. They held for the plaintiff in the second count and zero damages. But I'd like to point out that this was a relief for injunction, and in Judge Grubbs' order, he ruled in his order that under 8.02-500.
So are you seeking damages on appeal, attorney's fee damages on appeal based upon the civil conspiracy?
Well, there are two parts to the civil conspiracy. One of them is damages, the other one is injunctive relief. And if you look at Judge Grubbs' order that was entered on August 2nd, 2007, he said, I am awarding attorney's fees based on the section which said that you get injunctive relief under that section. Matter of fact, at that time, he awarded legal fees, and in the order said, submit your statement for legal fees.
That was before the first appeal, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then when it was appealed to this court, the court that will then back up, Judge Grubbs' order was reversed by Judge Campbell. Judge Grubbs retired. Judge Campbell took it over and dismissed the case. All right, then it was appealed before this court. This court heard it, granted the appeal, reversed it, sent it back for a jury trial on damages. The liability was admitted. This court also awarded legal fees. And under the relief, if you look at the history of this case, it was continued 20 times on the record. It set for jury trial 5 different times, and it was continued all on the motions of the defendant. And in arguing for my legal fees, I was successful in enjoying this man from coming on the road. The code section says that I'm entitled to legal fees for doing this. Plus, they did hold for the plaintiff. They awarded damages on one of the verdicts. They held for the plaintiff on the business conspiracy, but didn't award any damages. And I assume that they said, well, we did that up here. Now, here, I feel uncomfortable coming before the court down here arguing about legal fees. But I think counsel, that I can best explain.
On your career case, there sure have been a lot of legal fees expended.
Considerable.
No doubt about that. Let me go to that 2007 order, and I presume you've got a copy of it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I'm reading from the order. Further appearing to the court, count 4 is filed pursuant to 18.2-500, etc. And that pursuant to that statute, 18.2-500 and 499, pursuant to said provisions, the complainant has moved the court for injunctive relief. And the court then grants that injunctive relief, and it says the court further finds that pursuant to 18.2-500, the complainant is entitled to an award of the costs of suit and a reasonable fee to complainant's counsel. And it then goes on. So, would you agree that it appears that the attorney's fees in the context of that order related, at least in some measure, to the granting of the injunction?
Absolutely. That's what the court order, court order says that, I believe.
And now, subsequently, your client passed away.
That's correct.
And the court dissolved or indicated that the injunction was now moot.
That's correct.
On your motion or on your opponent's motion?
The injunction part of it?
Yes, sir.
The court has ruled that there's still work in progress. The son was operating the business. But this court went into appeal and said, well, since he's now deceased, this court just said, well, it's a good question since he's now deceased, which I was a little bit surprised because we were still going forward trying to get this job done. And if you notice, I had to file motions to show cause. The defendant discontinually violated the court order, never complied with it. And I kept going back to court trying to get the job finished or have the clients get the job finished. And there were three different attorneys involved for the defendants. Continued 20 times, and there were five jury trials set that I walked in, and it was continued. But I said, well, you know, I've had to pursue this. And you look and you say, well, they held for
counsel,
the plaintiff on the business conspiracy.
Hang on, you're going a little bit faster than I can think. Now, in its subsequent order, the March 2012 order, the court indicated that the injunction was moot. You indicated that there was no, that was not based upon the motion of either party? That was just.
It was not. Mm-hmm.
What's the authority for saying that injunction is moot merely because the person has died?
I don't know. That was on the appeal, and I think it's been a while since I was here arguing this case before.
Now, you're opposing. You were correct. I'm sorry. I was reading from our order on that, and I was just corrected on that. But when it's your opposing counsel indicates that you have conceded that the injunction is moot.
Not to my knowledge.
That's what I was getting at, whether there was indeed a concession. But it is a question of law, not a question of fact, whether the injunction is moot. Is that correct?
I would say that's correct. Yes.
And one cannot concede a question of law.
That's correct.
Okay. And that's what I wanted to determine, was what you had done at the trial level.
Well, this is a highly unusual case. I think with Judge Gibbs, when we're arguing about the legal fees, I stated in the record, appendix page 30 and 31, I said, and I'd point out that once Judge Grubb entered an order allowing legal fees, I have basically spent 2 or 3 years working on this case with various motions and hearings and so forth, and I proceeded relying on the fact that there was an award of legal fees. This court awarded legal fees. And the only question is, since that judgment is for the plaintiff, said damage is zero, does that eliminate the legal fees? And I say it should not. We did win. And we got damages, even punitive damages of $1,500. But the verdict was broke down in two stages, malicious prosecution and a business conspiracy. And, last time I was here, I said, Judge Grubb, enter an order allowing the judgment and legal fees, and I said, Judge Grubb giveth, and then the next judge taketh away and dismissed the whole thing. And I had to come down here, argue, it was reversed, and said, well, you've got legal fees, this court ruled that. Plus, if there's going to only be tried There's another element that's not on appeal, but Judge Gibbs struck the evidence on damages based on deposition. That's not part of the appeal, but there wasn't any evidence on the business conspiracy because the judge struck the evidence before trial. But I've never had a case. The problem I have is I walk into court to try a case and say, well, we changed attorneys 5 times. I mean, it was continued. I preferred 5 different jury trials, finally tried on the 6th time. And I'm the last man standing. I'm the only one who's into it to start off with. And I've gone through 3 judges and 3 lawyers. And like I say, this is my career case, been going on forever. But the legal fees, I think but for the fact that it's been awarded 2 or 3 times, and even Judge Grubbs, he said, submit at the first order, he said, go ahead and submit your statements. I think at that point, I believe the record would show that I submitted a bill for like $18,000 when that first order was entered. Well, then it went on. I had to file show cause orders after that. If you notice, I've got in the appendix where I had to file a motion for show cause. Well, that didn't proceed because the next judge dismissed the case. So I had to appeal it. We got all this delay come down, and it was reversed. So basically, I'd like to reserve rebuttal time.
You have 3 minutes and 32 seconds.
All right, thanks.
May it please the court, my name is Matthew Kelly, and I'm here today representing Bruce, Roger, and Eric Nestor, who I will collectively refer to as the Nestors. We're the appellees today.
Counsel, I'd like to go right back into the interplay between the 2007 and 2012 orders. In our 2012 order, we said that the circuit court shall award attorney's fees for the prosecution of the claim.
That language is within the order. That order also specifies that that award shall be subject to the prior 2007 circuit court order. And that order contains a statement saying that any attorney's fees awarded in this case would be subject to the approval of the circuit court.
Okay. And do you concur that when you look at the 2007 order in context, that the attorney's fees that were, when you look at it in context, that the attorney's fees, it can be interpreted that the attorney's fees were in part for obtaining the injunction.
We disagree, Your Honor. At that point, the attorney's fees, all of those claims, any attorney's fees before this court today, arise under the sections 18.2500, subsections A and subsection B would be for injunctive relief. There is no ruling in this 2007 order that would take out the requirement that the party needs to demonstrate injury to obtain this. And to the court's specific question about in 2007, it is left clear that the issue of damages and injury is left open for a final decision at a later date.
I'm not asking in terms of the damages. I'm reading from the order. Further appearing to the court, the count 4 is filed pursuant to 18.2500 as amended for violation of the provisions of 18.2499. Pursuant to said provisions, the complainant has moved the court for injunctive relief. For the reasons here and above enumerated, the court finds that the complainant is entitled to the relief prayed for in count 4. And then I'll skip over parts. He indicates he is hereby restrained and enjoined from continuing the acts, and then he awards attorney's fees. It's your interpretation that those attorney's fees do not relate to the injunction that was given?
It is our interpretation that this is not the final action and that we need to consider the context of subsequent proceedings as well. The primary subsequent proceeding of this case is there has been one jury trial during all of this procedural history, and that jury trial came up with a very critical result for both the injunctive relief. Under the Advanced Marine Enterprises case, this court has imparted that shall be injured language directly into subsection B. It noted that while it was not written into subsection B, it is a prerequisite to recovery when for both equitable and legal remedies. And in this context, the procedural history of this case continued beyond the summary judgment finding. The jury awarded $0 on both compensatory damages under the business conspiracy claim as well as punitive damages. That finding is what needs to weigh most heavily here today. And in view of that later procedural history, this court has stated in its March 2012 order that the circuit court did have discretion to reopen where necessary. And to the extent this order needed to be reopened, it was proper for the circuit court to do so after that jury's verdict. That finding of $0 establishes both under the Syed case that we've cited before this court and the statutory interpretation this court has set forth in the Advanced Marine Enterprises case that McDaniel is not a party who shall be injured. That predicate applies both to your question, Your Honor, to the damages provision, but also to the injunctive relief provisions.
Counsel, let me ask you this. Our 2012 order said in footnote 2, or held in footnote 2, that the request for injunctive relief was moot. So between that order and that appellate mandate and the end of the proceeding in the trial court, did the appellants ever ask for attorney's fees specifically related to the injunction as opposed to the statutory claim for damages?
No, Your Honor, and that's an excellent distinction that we've made in our briefs and I'd like to amplify. This issue is not before the court. The injunctive relief is barred under Rule 525 because the initial finding, let me back up. There was a plea and bar defendants filed prior to the first appeal. The circuit court dismissed all four counts. That included count 4 pertaining to injunctive relief. On appeal, this court noted that count 4 and that injunctive relief was moot in the footnote that Your Honor cites. On remand, that ruling was never disturbed. There were no attorney's fees granted back in 2011 on any of the four counts. That, again, was disturbed, but only in part. And the distinction here is very important. Count 4 was not something that was sent back to the trial court. That issue was decided previous on the first appeal because the injunctive relief was found moot, and subsequent to that proceedings, as this court has stated explicitly in its 2012 order, the parties proceeded with a trial limited to damages issues on two of the four original counts.
So let me see if I understand the sequence. The trial judge, before our first appeal, dismisses all of the counts, including the request for injunctive relief, comes up on appeal, we reverse in part and hold that we're not going to address any more injunctive relief issues because that's now moot.
That is what the March 2012 order...
So between then and now, did the appellants ever object, either to us or to the trial court, specifically over the failure to award attorney's fees for injunctive relief as opposed to damages under the statutory civil conspiracy?
No, Your Honor. There were arguments in the brief after the petition of appeal that newly raised the injunctive relief order, but under Rule 525, it was too late. It's not before this court. That was an issue that was decided back in 2011 and has not properly been preserved for appeal.
Counsel, does the death of the complainant moot an injunction as a matter of law?
Now, as a matter of law, the authority I'm relying on is the instructions this court gave us to this specific court, to this specific case, and this court instructed us that, yes, it did. Authority was provided in footnote 2 that Larry McDaniel's death, which was the father in this case, rendered that injunctive relief moot, and as a practical matter...
Well, counsel, was that issue argued, or was that simply based upon the concession of the parties? I'm asking that question carefully. I don't recall that being argued at all. I recall both parties conceding a question of law, and that is that because of the death, the injunction was moot.
Yeah, I will candidly admit I don't remember all of oral argument, but from what I recall is there was a statement in the brief that we have cited in ours, our brief, where the appellant, McDaniel, did concede this. We have basically relied on that first dismissal that found that injunctive relief was ended, and we hadn't really addressed mootness, so it wasn't something that was addressed in the first appeal. We believe it was conceded based on statements in the prior appeals briefs. That is not in these briefs. That was in the 2011 briefs.
Okay. Do you agree with your opposing counsel that appellate counsel cannot concede a question of law?
I believe appellate counsel can fail to challenge the and put the necessary documents and items before this court to allow this court to reach a question of law. And in this case, whether it has been conceded or not, it has not properly been preserved as a matter of law under Rule 525 for this court to address it. Perhaps if other steps that have not been taken were taken, it would be available, but under the record before this court, it is not a question that can be reached. Moreover, I'd like to return to the damages issue because, as counsel argued, there are two predicates under which he appears to be seeking damages. The injunctive relief we've discussed is off the record for this court. It's not been preserved. The damages issues, really the critical inquiry here is the jury verdict came to a $0 damages on the malicious prosecution count. Now, arguments have been made that there was a recovery under, under the business conspiracy count, there were $0 in damages awarded, both compensatory and punitive. Arguments have been made that under the malicious prosecution, that award of damages, which is in fact the case, there were $1,500 in compensatory damages awarded and $5,000 in punitives, that that somehow rectifies the jury's finding of zero damages and should permit attorney's fees. That is not the case. That is not the law in the Commonwealth. That $0 verdict under the business conspiracy renders McDaniel an uninjured party, and the statute is clear. The remedies that follow must be available only to persons who shall be injured in their trade, profession, or reputation. This court in the Andrews versus Ring case has ruled that malicious prosecution are damages to the person. They are not damages to the business. They are separate categories of damages, and so a prevailing under malicious prosecution does not entitle McDaniel to any of the remedies that may have been available under 18.2500.
Counsel, is there any distinction to be made in the pronouncement in Saeed, which addresses a trial before a jury, where a jury is asked to decide in one unified trial liability and damages, and this what has become a bifurcated procedure, if you will, where this court has basically, based on the prior rulings of the trial court, directed a verdict on liability, remanded the case for a damage proceeding. Is there a distinction between those two types of proceedings where the rule in Saeed would not bar attorney's fees here?
There is a distinction in the sense that one is a directed verdict coming from this court, as you note, and that was based on procedural failures the Nestors made earlier in this case. There was a failure to respond to requests for admissions. It did not permit the jury to hear the issue of liability. But there is no distinction in terms of whether the rule of Syed should apply to this case. This case, in both instances, the jury in Syed found liability. And in this case, summary judgment was granted, and then on appeal, this court sent instructions to not disturb that finding. But in both cases, the issue of whether the party asserting a claim under the statutory business conspiracy codes, whether they were injured, was firmly before the jury. The evidence was presented to the jury on those counts. And in both cases...
Well, the issue before the jury was damages. In my mind, there's a distinction when a directed verdict. What if the parties had agreed that liability, that you were liable, and then the jury came back with zero damages? Would your position still be the same, that the zero damages under that procedural construct wipes out the concession of liability? Or the agreement of liability?
Our position would be that $0 damages award prevents the party seeking relief under 18.2500 from qualifying under the plain language of the statute as a person who shall be injured. And in the absence of meeting that statutory predicate, it would not avail that person to the later remedies. Those would include treble damages. Those would include, and relevant here, reasonable attorney's fees. So without a demonstration of injury, none of that is available, either under 18.2500A or 18.2500B under the statutory construction in Advanced Marine Enterprises.
Counsel, let's get to your question.
Thank you.
Turn to page 16 of the joint appendix, if you would, counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
We've already talked about the August 2007 order of the Circuit Court granting an injunction and granting attorney's fees, and one way to interpret the 2007 order is that the attorney's fees related at least in part to the injunction. When I look at the final order on page 16, after Mr. McDaniel's, when I look at the final order on page 16, I don't see the injunction being mooted or dissolved. When did the court moot or dissolve the injunction from 2007?
The prior plea in bar, which is not in the joint appendix, but I can provide, there was a citation to the record, in our case, placed all four counts before the court prior to this order. This order that the court directs my attention to states that all matters are concluded save the attorney's fees issues, which are argued later.
Okay. Your prior plea and bar that is in the record but not in the joint appendix, did it specifically ask the court to dissolve or moot the injunction? Was that on your motion?
It requested that all counts be dismissed. I do not know if it went so far as to specifically request, but the intention of that plea and bar was that all matters associated with this case would be dismissed and the matter would be finally concluded, which would include that injunctive relief that we've been discussing in 2007.
Due to the death of Mr. McDaniel?
At that time, it was due to the illegality of the contract,
okay.
And only portions of that came back from that proceeding. The injunctive relief did not come back to us after the prior appeal.
And this final order on page 16 is what was appealed to us, and that we then sent back. Is that,
that in combination with
the other order that
So I do believe both of them were the prior appeal, but importantly, they were not disturbed after that finding, either by this court or in later proceedings, and they have not been specifically objected to in a manner that would preserve them under Rule 525.
So if I understand your argument, then your argument is that the orders on the order on 16 dissolved the injunction by granting the plea and bar.
That is correct in common.
And that issue was not appealed by your opposing counsel.
It was not properly appealed, and to the extent it was found to be moot by this court and then not remanded for further consideration. This court's order in March of 2012 was, I apologize, I see my time has...
Yeah, and my question's answered. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Crewe?
All right, I would point out one thing. The jury held in favor of the plaintiff on the business conspiracy. It says we hold for the plaintiff.
But our cases say, and the seminal case, Rawls, says that a zero verdict, and in some cases a $1 nominal verdict, is a verdict on liability for the defense, perversely thus expressed, is the language. So that plus Saeed, which says that damages is an element of liability, which is a little awkward, but that's what we held, is the law.
All right. Of course, I would respectfully disagree with the court, but the second element is, if you look at 18.2500, it states, if you file a civil suit, you sue for threefold damages, and you're entitled to costs and reasonable attorney's fees. Well, that's part one on damages. Well, they have a separate one on injunction. It says if you file a suit alleging or asking for injunctive relief, then they got attorney's fees in that. So they're two separate things. And
May I interrupt you one more time, counsel? SAID said this, Code Section 18.2500 requires a finding of some compensatory damages as an element of determining liability under the statute. Is that not on point?
Well, of course, if you, you know, I still say that they held for the plaintiff. And what happened since you had two verdicts here? They granted 1,500 punitive and 5,000, and they filled in. I think the jury could, they could have stuck it in either place. It's two different. Well, they held in favor of the plaintiff in both, and they assessed $6,500 in damages. But I think it's really clear under this section that since we were seeking injunctive relief, I'd like to point out one other thing right quickly, if I may. There was a question about the attorneys, about submitting attorneys' fees, and on page 6 of my brief, I said a statement of plaintiff's attorneys' fees was approved to file in court. The plaintiff was denied the right to file additional supplemental attorneys' fees since the court ruled the plaintiff was not entitled to attorneys' fees. That's on page 89 in the appendix. So the statement, I didn't try to get additional fees. If you look on page 89, I did move them. Court, but that was not accepted because they said you're not getting the attorney's fees. So with my last 40 seconds, I would like to say that this probably would be my last hurrah as far as attorney after 48 years that I've been before this court before. And I can honestly say I've enjoyed law practice as much now as I did in day one. And I'm 75 years old. And I enjoy it. It's been a privilege, and I probably won't be back again because I'm heading to Florida as soon as I get out here.
Mr. Curry, have a safe trip. Call the next case.